I'm going to make a very, very quick review of what we saw, even though in the previous class we also made a review. I'm going to make a very quick review. We're learning the actually what is called Shaar HaIchud VaEmunah, the plural of unity and faith. And if you would like to summarize all that we're learning what does it mean actually faith. There are many explanations to this, but this is one of them. This is one of them. So this is the author of the book. Actually, this drawing is not the original one. The original one is black and white, and we just only have one picture, so to speak, of the Alter Rebbe, which is pretty similar to this, drawn by. It's a whole story how we actually got to us. We're learning the second part of Tanya, and we're learning certain ideas that will help us, as we saw in the introduction, will help us think about God, think about Him, think about the world, think about ourselves, which is actually one of the big, big, huge differences between learning Kabbalah and learning Hasidus. When you learn Kabbalah, you learn. I never saw this written like this, but I don't know. It came into my mind, so I should share it. When you learn Kabbalah, you learn about God. When you learn Hasidus, you learn about yourself or your relationship with God, so to speak, something like that. So we're going to learn a few ideas that will help us think about God. We start in chapter one that the creation is an ongoing process. Basically, that's chapter one. Chapter two, creation is something from nothing, and it's with God's words, speech. Then we saw that just as speech is insignificant to human being, like my words are not really describing what I am, and we're going to learn more about this today. The same way, the whole world, which is created by God's speech, is insignificant to him. And we learn about the famous example that the Alter Rebbe brings about the sun and the ray of the sun. This is what we were holding. So I'm going to stop a little bit more in this particular slide, and then we're going to move on. In this slide, we find the explanation, so to speak, where did the Alter Rebbe got this example of sun and ray of the sun? And he got it from actually a verse in Tehillim, in the Psalms. The verse says, Ki shemesh u'magen hava Elokim. The sun and its shield covering represent those two names. That one of them is called the Shema Avaye, which I explained, I think, I hope clearly it doesn't mean anything. Avaye, it's a made-up word that doesn't mean anything. Don't call God that with this name because it's not a name. It just represents a name of God. Which name? The name of four letters, a Yud, a Hey, a Vav, and a Hey. And this name actually represents God as infinite. This is what it means, infinity. And then we learned about the Shem Elohim. Then another name of God, which the word, again, I repeat this, I know, but the word Elohim actually doesn't mean anything. It's just a made-up word to refer to a specific name of God. Which name of God? The name of God, actually, we see it in the beginning of the page. Avaye, I just wrote it like two yuds. And Elohim is written just like that. This name represents that which covers God, just as the sun has a shield on top of it. And that shield actually and this is only a model to describe something that does not fit actually science. The God does the I'm sorry, the sun doesn't have a shield, the earth has a shield. And that's okay. I explained this also. We're not in a science class over here. We're just in a Hasidic class. And Hasidic uses whatever we see to explain things. The way God creates the world. I'm going to give you a very simple example of this. I know this example can be argued. I know. So I'm just making a small introduction before the example. I know that. But bear with me, you'll understand, hopefully, what I'm trying to say. There's a famous discussion in ancient science whether the center of the world is the earth or the sun. Usually, people saw the scientists in ancient times saw the earth is in the center, and everything else just goes around the earth. And the Rambam writes this also in his book. Aristotle thought about this and spoke about this, etc., etc. Nowadays, we don't see the world like that in science. We see a sun in the middle, like our solar system. We see the sun in the middle, and all the planets go around the sun, and that's fine. Who's right and who's wrong? Okay, if you ask a regular scientist today, he's going to tell you, look, ancient scientists didn't really understand it. They didn't get it. The right system is the sun in the middle, and everything goes around the sun in different orbits, etc., etc. But if you really go deep into this, both are right. It's not that somebody's right and somebody's wrong. Depends on how you look at it. If you look at it standing in the earth and you raise your eyes to the heavens and you look at the heavens, you see everything going around yourself. So who's the center of the world? What's the center of the world? Actually, you. And this is something that the Talmud actually says, that every single human being should look at himself, herself, it's the same thing, with men and women, as the whole world was created just for me. I'm responsible for everything that happens, which is a whole thing to think about, meditate about, etc., etc. What's my responsibility towards the whole humanity, the whole world? So nobody's actually right and wrong. Both are right, depends how you see things. If you stand in the sun, you see everybody turning around you. And if you stand in the earth, you see everybody turning around you. If you stand in Mars, you will see everybody standing around, going around you. It's a matter of perspective. The same exact thing happens with this example of the sun and the covering of the sun. Yeah, the verse says that the sun has a covering, but it's not giving us a class on science. David HaMelech was not a scientist, and he was not giving us a class on science. He was trying to convey an idea. What's the idea? Oh, this is what the Alter Rebbe is saying. The sun represents infinity. The covering, the shield of the sun represents that which actually constricts, restricts this infinity, which in itself, and this is what we're going to learn in a few minutes, which in itself is also infinity, and is something we cannot really grasp and understand. So this is where I'm going to explain this really in a minute. So we learned about Shem Havayeh. Shem Havayeh is the name of God that represents infinity. We learned about Shem Elohim. That's the name of God that conceals this infinity and generates a sensation of a limited creation. Let's move on. Part two of chapter four. When we talk about God, we're not talking about something we can actually define, and we can actually explain what he is or what he is not. Anything we say about him actually limits him. There's a famous saying, this is actually in Kabbalah, but Hasidus brings this idea in many places. There's a famous saying trying to explain what actually God is. If you say that God has power in infinity, like he can create infinity and infinite kinds of things and amount of things, etc., etc., and you take out of him the power of creating finitude, like something restricted, you're actually restricting God. And if you say the opposite, you're also restricting God, that God is only limited to doing this or doing that. In other words, we're going to talk about this later, but in other words, what's God's job description? Like if you have a lawyer, what does he do? Okay, he whatever, he, lawyer with deals with laws and cases and problems and the witnesses. Okay, that's what a lawyer does. And what's a doctor? Okay, a doctor deals with bodies and diseases and all kinds of things. That's what a doctor does. What does God do? People usually think, okay, he's the creator. Actually, many people in the Jewish world call God Bore Olam. Bore Olam. He's the creator of the world, and the creator of the world is another. Okay, wait a second. Is that God's job description? Is that what he knows how to do? In other words, like more mystical and a little bit deeper, we call God the Ein Sof, infinity. And there's something that we call the Or Ein Sof, the light of the infinity. Whoa, wow, tremendous thing. Okay, wait a second. Is God a light bulb? He gives light? No, that's not what he does. No, we don't know what he does. we don't know his job description. We just know that he creates this world and he shows himself in a certain way. But his essence, we don't get it. We don't know it. We just know, again, how he expresses this essence. That's what is called qualities. Sefirot, spheres in Kabbalah language, Hasidic also language, Hasidic language. He shows himself, he expresses himself in such a way. And this is a very simple thing. Actually, it could seem something complicated, but it's actually very simple. Suppose a teacher goes to a class in university or wherever it is, doesn't really matter. And the teacher goes to class, gives a class on something, on whatever subject, math. All right, okay, so he taught math. And the students hear the class, learn the class, understand what the teacher is saying, and they say, wow, this is a good kid, teacher. Great teacher. He taught a class on math, ta 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 ta. Very nice. Is that the teacher? Like, is that all that he knows how to do? No. He goes back home and he's a father to a son or daughter, whatever, and he's a husband and he does all kinds of things. When he was in university, he was a teacher and he was expressing himself as a teacher. Happens in many, many cases. I don't know concrete examples. I don't have. But if you think a little bit, you're going to find yourself. You don't need me for that. But many, many times, like famous actors, very funny people and very incredible people, when they're actually home, they're not funny, they're not so incredible, they're like to themselves. But if they go in a stage, woo, it's fire, and they start talking and then making everybody laugh. And what is thinking? But when you're home, you don't even talk to me. What's going on with you? Okay, it's not the same thing. This is how he expresses, or she, whatever, it's the same thing as an actor. And this is how he really is. So the same thing happens with God. We don't know what he really is. There's no description for that. He shows himself in certain ways. In which ways? He decided to show himself in qualities, with these qualities that express what he says it is, but they don't really express himself completely. Another example, a little bit more refined example that is brought in Kabbalah and in Hasidus also. That's why I put a picture of a light going through glasses of different colors. You have the light. The light itself doesn't really have colors. It's just light. But when the light shines through a glass, a red one, so you see a red light. When the light shines in green through a green glass, you see green light. Does that mean that the light is actually green? It's actually red? The answer is no. And furthermore, the light does not acquire a color just because you see a specific color. No. The light is just, let's call it without any color, colorless. However, when you see this light shining through a specific glass with a specific color, you see a specific color, red, green, or whatever the color is. But the light doesn't have any colors. That's an example given to understand how God shows himself to us. Does that mean that what we see or what we understand is what really God is? No. No, no. That's how he shows himself through these glasses, quote unquote, which are called in Kabbalah language, in Hasidic language, spheres. The word sphera itself, we're not going to go so much, so deep into this because it's not the purpose of the book or whatever, the class, but the word itself means to shine. Saphir is like a precious stone that shines when the light blows on it or whatever, the light shines on it, it shines. That's why it's called sphera, because it allows for a specific revelation of God. That's what it means. Now, I put these words in red, on purpose, of course, because this is one of the main ideas of this book that we're learning. There's a unity between God and his qualities. What does that mean, that unity? Nobody understands. And this is what the Alter Rebbe says. Not that I say, because I'm Tuvia, I don't understand. No, 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 no. Nobody understands this. How God is actually united with his qualities. And the Alter Rebbe quotes Zohar. Zohar is a book of Kabbalah. It's a famous book. Not so long ago was Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day of the counting of the Omer, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Kabbalah, Zohar. Okay, I'm not going to go into all the things, but the point is that one of the famous quotes of the Zohar is that God and his qualities are one. What does that mean? Nobody knows. And that Rebbe says, hello, welcome to faith. This is what it means. Again, in this book, there are other explanations, yeah. Deeper explanations, yes. But this is what we're learning now. This is what faith means. Something we cannot grasp, something that does not make any sense, and something that we're not going to explain like others try to explain. What I mean, others? I mean, other religions try to explain. I remember a long time ago arguing with the Christian, whatever, about God, unity, and who's one or not one, how many gods are there, et cetera, et cetera. And he was telling me, like, look, you have an egg. An egg is just one egg, but the egg has a white part and the yellow part, you know, the covering of the egg. Everything is called the egg. So God also has many parts, but it's just one God. He said, no way. You can't say that. It's impossible to say that. Why? Very simple. When you have a summary, when you add up parts, because each part has a definition and you can say this part starts here and ends here, automatically, whatever you add, how many parts you want to add, they want to have a limit. There's no such a thing as an addition, one after the other, unlimited, in an unlimited way. There's no such a thing. Like even time is composed of very tiny parts of time. Even if you want to say nanoseconds, okay, say nanoseconds, I don't care. You add nanosecond, 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 you're never going to have infinite nanoseconds. Never. Because you're only adding one to whatever you have. You can have a lot of money. Oh, in Mazel Tov, you have a lot of money, but it only adds $1 at a time. So you're never going to have infinite money. There's no such a thing in this world, at least that we live. Not that I don't have infinite money. Of course I don't have, but nobody can have. You can have a lot. That's fine. That's good. But never infinite. There's no such a thing as infinity in this world because the world itself is finite. It's limited. With this idea in mind, we don't understand what it means that God is one with his qualities. This is the main idea of the book. That's what it means, unit. That's why the book is actually called Sha'ar HaYichud VeHaEmunah. There's a unity and there's faith. This unity belongs to the world of faith. It doesn't belong to the world of understanding. Even so, one of the greatest thing in Chabad, things in Chabad, why is Chabad Lubavitch called Chabad? Because Chabad means Chokhmah Bina and Das, understanding. Whatever the differences are, I'm not going to translate, it doesn't matter. But Chabad means understanding. So we try to, this is what the Alter Rebbe actually taught us, and it's a consecutive Rebbeim. We try to understand as much as we can, even things that actually don't make any sense. But it doesn't mean that suddenly they make sense. No. There's something called faith and something very important called faith, emunah. It's a very, very fundamental thing in Judaism. But we have to understand that that's faith. What's in our book? Faith, God and his qualities are one. Okay, why is the Alter Rebbe saying this? We're going to explain this in a few minutes. Why is the Alter Rebbe like going to this idea of oneness and God, his qualities, and this is faith. Why? The Alter Rebbe says like this. Look, until now, we spoke about two names of God. That's why I said this is chapter 4, part 2. It's like a long and deep chapter, one of the main chapters of the whole book. We spoke about, I'm going to go back, Shem Havayeh, the name of God that represents infinity, and Shem Elokim, the name of God that represents restriction. We tend to think that infinity means actually infinity, and restriction means the opposite of infinity, but this is wrong. And this is what the Alter Rebbe explains in this chapter. I'm going forward again. Infinite creation means God gives. And because he is infinite, he actually gives in an infinite way. if the world would be given permission to see what's really going on in the world, we would only see God. We wouldn't even see ourselves. We wouldn't even perceive ourselves perceiving God. Forget it. Only God. Next step, the second name that we spoke about, Elohim, is also infinite. It's infinite restriction. So we have a problem over here. Infinite restriction means that there shouldn't be any world. Infinite giving means God creating infinity of worlds. Infinite restriction means nothing. So these two things come together. They're opposites. Oh, hello. Let's go back to faith, emunah, unity of the qualities of God. Which qualities? Basically these two qualities of infinity of giving, infinity of restriction. These two things come together. How do they come together? Because they're one with God, and therefore they can coexist. They go together to create what? A world that we can exist. And as we're going to learn just in a minute, in the next chapter, a world where we could actually have and tap to some things that go beyond the world. I'm going to explain this in a second. But the main thing of this second part of the chapter is, look, there's God, His essence, we don't understand it. There are qualities of God that he chooses to express himself with these qualities, and they are united. What's the accomplishment of that? Let's go to chapter 5. At the end, I put this, the first part, vessels, etc. I'll explain in a second. I put this in chapter 5, but the truth is, this is the end of chapter 4. But in order to understand it a little bit easier, I put it into chapter 5. Otherwise, chapter 4 would have been like too long. The Alter Rebbe explains that these ideas that we spoke about, the name of God, Havaya, the name of God, Elohim, infinite creation, infinite restriction, and this is something that we call faith, etc., etc. This is what is called, now in chapter 5, the famous two ideas that are brought in Kabbalah and Hasidus, Kelim, which means vessels, and Oir, which means light. This does not mean that in the heavens or wherever there are vessels over there running around and lights into these vessels. No. One of the most common mistakes of people when learning Kabbalah, when learning Hasidus, is to try to materialize the idea that we learn. No. Terrible mistake. Anything that we're talking about is an abstract idea that God chose to explain to us through our sages in material terms, because we think in material terms. We can't think in abstract, completely abstract terms. Even if you think about love, oh, it's an abstract thing. We think about how does this thing of love applies to our lives? What can we do with it? How does it feel? And that's already material. Like your heart pumps stronger, and you give something to somebody, and you smile to somebody. Okay, we think about these ideas, and that we say, oh, that's called love. We only think in like material terms. So again, when we're talking about vessels and light, kelim and oil, it's just an example to say kindness and severity. Vessels, actually, they're turned around. They should be in the other way. Vessels is represents severity, which restrict, that's why I put the picture of sheep with the lots of vessels over there. Each one of them carries a specific thing, specific light, so to speak, and expresses an aspect of God that he chose to express each vessel in a different way. And the vessel, so to speak, constricts and restricts the light so that it should shine in a specific way, like the glasses of colors we saw previously. This is like the end of chapter 4, and the Alter Rebbe over there is just saying, look, that idea that is brought down in Kabbalah, in other places in Hasidus, of vessels and light, that's the same thing I'm explaining, would say the Alter Rebbe, about the names of God, the infinity, the restriction, etc. Now, the truth is that we see a world, a physical world. We don't see God's creation, so to speak. We don't see God into the world. We don't see God's energy in the world. So there's a question that Del Rebbe poses in this chapter, which is actually a difficult chapter to learn. It might seem simple, but it's very difficult to learn when actually learning the text itself for many reasons. But the point is like this. Del Rebbe brings one of the sayings of our sages. If you see how the Torah starts the creation, the only name, now that we know a little bit about names, Shem Havayeh, Shem Elokim, you have to keep these ideas in your mind, infinity, restriction. The only name used in the creation is Elokim. Actually, the first verse in the Torah is Bereshit bara Elokim, that the Lord or whatever, the Lord created the world, etc., etc. Just Shem Elokim, just restriction, only that. That's the only name, actually, 32 times is used in the creation itself. So, if so, what does that mean? Our sages explain in a very simple way, and Rashi, actually, in his commentary, brings this idea of our sages. God thought about creating the world only with severity, only with Shem Elokim. That means very simple rules. Rules and only rules. And if you're out of the rule because you made something you should not do, you were not supposed to do, you're out. That's it. There's no way out. There's no kindness, so to speak. Only rules, only severity. That's the way God thought how to create the world. However, say our sages, God saw that the world would not actually function like that. It's impossible. You're creating a human being that makes mistakes. We're human beings. And God created us in that way. You shouldn't feel so bad when you make a mistake. That's actually how God created you. Unless you're a tzaddik or whatever, a just person, a righteous person. Okay, we're not dealing with that. We're not dealing with tzaddikim. Now, the point is, again, God created the world with severity. He saw that the world would not function like that. So he decided to mix in kindness. This is what our sages say. Now that we understand a little bit better about the names of God and God created the world in such a way that his energy is hidden within creation, his infinity is hidden within creation in order to give us the possibility of living, of existing. Otherwise, nothing would exist, only God. Therefore, asks the Alter Rebbe, what's the kindness in creation? How do you find kindness in creation? There's no such a thing. In other words, the question of the Alter Rebbe is like this: open your eyes. Do you see God? At least I don't see God. So don't come to me and say that God mixed himself, so to speak, his revelation, so to speak, his light, so to speak, into the world. That's not true. I don't see it. Nobody sees it. Maybe again, some righteous guy, whatever, but nobody sees this. So what does that mean that his kindness, his revelation, his infinity is mixed in the world? There's no such a thing. And again, in the words of the creation, only Shem Elokim is used, and only like after a whole chapter, then the Torah says, in the day that Havaya Elokim created the world. Oh, so God mixed in Havaya into the creation also, like infinity. Where is that? Alter Rebbe says something very interesting. Alter Rebbe says you can see the kindness of God in the world in the miracles that the righteous people do perform. In other words, don't expect to open your eyes today that for whatever reason, and nobody can understand this why, and the Rebbe said nobody understands why, Mashiach is not here. So we don't see God. Right now, at least, Mashiach is not here. Hopefully, when somebody else sees this recording, Mashiach will be already here. But right now, he's not here. So we don't see God. So how can you say that he mixed himself into the creation? That's not true. So the Alter Rebbe says, there are tzaddikim. And these tzaddikim, these righteous people, do miracles. And those miracles are recorded in the Talmud, in stories, in people, in witnesses, eyewitnesses, like first-hand witnesses, okay? All kinds of miracles, different miracles. That's where you see the kindness of God. Why is a miracle the kindness of God? Because what a miracle means actually is something that goes beyond nature. If something is natural, and again, nature means that God is covered actually, if something is natural, so you don't see God. And even if you say, hey, this is not so probable to happen, you know, this shouldn't have happened, maybe God is mixed in it. Look, Is there a probability, like a true one? Yes. Forget it. No miracle. Oh, you found somebody in the supermarket. Yeah. Okay. Everybody goes to supermarket. Sooner or later, you have to go because you need to buy groceries and blah, blah, blah. So what do you mean a miracle that I found you over here? It's no miracle. I needed something, you needed something, and we came to the same store. That's all. No miracles. However, there are certain things that really go beyond nature that are impossible, literally impossible in the rules of nature, and that's what a miracle means, to go beyond nature. And that's what tzaddikim do, and that's how you see the kindness of God. This is what the Alter Rebbe explains in this fifth chapter. I put one more phrase. I'm going to explain it very briefly, and we move on to the next chapter, which is also long and hard. The Alter Rebbe questions himself, not himself, the Alter Rebbe asks another question in this fifth chapter, which is like a parenthesis, like the whole chapter is like a big parenthesis into the text. The Alter Rebbe explains that the reason why God gave us commandments is to bring his presence down here in earth. That people should sense his presence, understand his presence. Yeah, we're going to see only this. We're only going to see this when Mashiach comes soon in our days, speedily in our days. But the point is, that's the whole thing of Torah and Mitzvahs. The Alter Rebbe basically asks, why did Moshe need to do Torah and Mitzvahs? If Moshe, for instance, had a prophecy, Nevuah, prophecy, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, etc., so he saw God. He didn't need Torah mitzvahs, and he didn't see actually a world. He just saw God. That's what the Alter Rebbe questions. And the Alter Rebbe answers basically that even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't see properly, really God. He just saw a diminished version of God, whatever God allowed him to see. And even though he was the most elevated prophet, etc., he only saw parts of it or whatever expressions of it that do not define the essence of God. And that's why also Moshe needed to fulfill commandments, because he could not reach the spiritual level that a commandment holds inside of it, like the energy that commandments hold, the mitzvahs hold inside of them. That's why Moshe also needed this. It's, again, it's like a big parenthesis within the book itself. This is basically chapter 5. What did we learn over here? We learned that there's such a thing as nature, there's such a thing as beyond nature, and we, like regular people, we don't see the energy of God in the world. That's normal. That's the system. Don't feel bad about it. And there are tzaddikim that actually live in a different with a different power, so to speak, to make miracles. Okay, let's go to chapter 6. Now the Alter Rebbe in this chapter actually starts more of explaining, so to speak. Oh, sorry. Okay, I don't know. Yeah. The Alter Rebbe starts like explaining, going back basically to the beginning of the book and really telling us what faith actually means, unity actually means, etc., etc. The Alter Rebbe quotes a verse. It's a famous verse, Parshas Vayitzchan. It says, "V'yadata, you should know." Okay, let's just read the translation. "Know therefore this day and put into your heart that God is the Lord." I actually underlined those words. God is the Lord in heaven above and on earth below. There is no other. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people before going into the land of Israel, the land of Canaan, to transform it into the land of Israel, etc., etc. The verse actually says, "Havaye hu Elokim." That's what it, God is the Lord. God represents Havaye. It's actually written with four letters, Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei, and Lord is Elohim. So the Torah itself is telling us something very interesting. Until now, we understood there are two names of God. There are others, of course, but we're talking about two of them, Havaye and Elohim, infinity and restriction. Oh, very nice. But the Torah says something else. The Torah says that Havaye is the same thing as Elohim. The actually kindness and severity are the same. What do you mean? Havaya is something that gives infinity, and again, it's restriction. They're not the same. So why is the Torah calling them the same? Alter Rebbe gives a very, very nice explanation. And the idea is like this, as it's written over there: severity is actually kindness. Why? Because imagine, I'm going to give an example, besides the example of teacher and student, but imagine a father or a mother, whatever. I talk about fathers because I'm a man. Imagine a father that sees one of the children trying to put like a clip or something into the outlet in the wall. He's trying really hard to put something in the over there, fits, doesn't fit, and he's playing over there. The father sees this and starts screaming, "What are you doing? You're going to die! Don't do this! It's dangerous! No." The father gets nervous, you know? It's really dangerous. And the son, the daughter, whatever, got scared. Oh, sorry, starts crying, a whole mess in the house because he was putting something inside the outlet. What happened over there? What actually happened over there? The father got angry, severity, screamed, clear expression of gvura, severity. However, what's behind that? The true energy over there is kindness, is love. Because I love you, I don't want you to get damaged, to do something dangerous. Therefore, I'm decided to scream, whatever, etc., etc. If the father would have said, "Oh, what a nice baby, putting something inside the outlet. This is so nice." The baby would have continued doing it, no problem. Because father is happy with this, so no. Stop it. This is actually kindness, but it expresses itself as severity. Now, this restriction that God uses to create the world, that in Kabbalah is called tzimtzum, tzimtzum means contraction, this severity is actually kindness. Why? Because without that, we wouldn't exist. Imagine if the sun would shine upon us without any atmosphere, without any covering, without nothing, we would burn. There wouldn't be life in earth, on earth. So therefore, you need something to cover the sun, the atmosphere, whatever the case is, Shemesh Umagen, sun and the shield, etc., etc. That actually is kindness, is not severity. Same thing happens with a teacher and a student, exactly the same. If the teacher comes in to first grade and starts teaching deep math with all kinds of formulas and numbers in the board, etc., boards and boards written with numbers and formulas, the kids can't understand this. It's first grade. What do you want? Bring an apple, another apple, and show how to sum, to add up one apple, two apples. Oh, you see, you have two apples. Oh, very nice. But you can't add an apple to an orange. No, you can't. This is that the kids can understand. But deep math, what do you mean? It's first grade. Impossible. So the teacher has to make, I'm sorry, the teacher has to restrict the information to make it available properly to the student. And then the student can actually incorporate ideas and can understand it and grow from that idea into understanding what the teacher actually understands. I always give an example. I don't know if I have the words in English, but maybe you'll help me. The example is, if you want to teach physics to first graders, don't go to the class and again fill the board with numbers and formulas. It's impossible. Forget it. But if you bring all kinds of little balls and you start playing with the balls, the ball goes over there, and the ball, and you throw one ball over there, and it kicks the ball and the other ball, and it goes to the other direction. That's physics, actually, because you have vectors of energy applied to each ball, and the strength that you threw the ball is going to allow the ball to reach a specific place, and the roughness of the floor where the ball is actually rolling is going to stop the ball. It's all physics. But you're not saying any word about physics, any word about math, any word about vectors and strength and forget it, direction. Forget it. They can't get it. But they studied physics, playing with little balls. Okay, the same thing happens with the kindness and the severity. The severity of God is kindness. This is what it means, Havaya Elokim. When the Torah says that these two names that seem to be so opposite are actually the same, what is the Torah saying? They're not the same. They sound actually different. Yeah, they're written different. Yeah, you're right. But the same, it's the same. It's the kindness of God. In other words, and then we continue. In other words, the fact that we can talk about God We can say anything about him. He's big, he's nice, he's whatever you want to say about him, he actually is. It's okay. That is the greatest kindness that God does with us. That we can even think about him, we can even meditate about him, talk about him, say anything about him. That's kindness already. But whatever you're saying, you're actually limiting God. He's big. Oh, really? He's big and he's not small? Okay, he's small. Huh? So he's not big? No, he's both. No, it can't be both. Okay. Whatever you say, you're limiting God, like it or not. But that itself is the kindness of God, that we can talk about him. We can say anything about him. Now, the Alter Rebbe finishes the chapter, which is a long chapter, but the Alter Rebbe finishes the chapter saying, I know this is hard. I understand this is a difficult concept because usually kindness is kindness and severity is severity. Forget it. You can't mix them. However, that's why the verse itself, the first verse I quoted in the beginning of this slide, the verse itself says, Vashevoisa, you should put this into your heart. Like, I know this is hard. Doesn't make so much sense and can be difficult to actually grasp it. However, that's what the verse itself says. Think about it. Put it into your heart. Meditate on this. Dwell on this. Sleep on this. One night, two nights, three nights, your whole life. You have your whole life to think about this. That's why the verse itself says, I know this is tough. Let's move on. Chapter 7. Now we're going to go a little bit deeper. What's the idea of chapter 7? The Alter Rebbe brings different, gives us different tools to use the concepts we spoke about before during prayer. Why? Why is the Alter Rebbe doing this? This is not written. I understand it this way. Can be wrong, of course. The idea is like this. The best time to actually think about God is prayer. It happens many, many times that people pray really fast. Like, blah, 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 just say the words, and in 1 hour you finish everything in the morning, and it should take much more than 1 hour. Actually, the Talmud says that the first pious people used to have 1 hour before prayer. Prayer itself was 1 hour, and 1 hour after prayer, thinking about God. 3 hours. And just one part of the prayer. When Talmud talks about prayer, he's talking about the prayer that's called Amidah, that you say in front of God, standing with your feet together. So that part just took them 1 hour. 1 hour before preparing, 1 hour saying it, and 1 hour afterwards. So it's a long time, of course. Not everybody has 3 hours. Basically, nobody has. But the point is that that's the best time to think about God. So that's why the Alter Rebbe connects many of the concepts that we actually learned already. We're not going to learn like different ideas. No, it's just an application, how to apply those ideas that we learned already. Let's go. The Alter Rebbe brings in chapter 7 a famous verse, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hear Israel, I'm sorry, God is our Lord, God is alone. God is one, so to speak. Alone, one, whatever translation you want to say. And the Alter Rebbe says, this actually represents two levels of unity of God. We spoke already about unity, that it means that God and his emanations, his spheroids, his expressions are actually one. And we said that this is only faith, so there's nothing to understand over there. But there are two ways of looking at it. There's a way of upper unity and there's a way of lower unity. And what this actually means is how God sees the world and how we see the world. It's two very different things, from up down and from down up. It's really, really different. What's the difference? Let's go back for a minute, for a second, even though Alter Rebbe doesn't talk about this, but I think it's easier to understand. Let's go back for a second to the teacher and the student example. When the teacher says something to the student in a way that the student can understand it, usually, not always, but usually, it's a level of knowledge much lower than how the teacher really understands it. Like we're talking about an ideal teacher and an ideal student. The ideal teacher knows everything, And the ideal student doesn't know anything. That's the how far they are from each other. So the teacher has to say something to the student in the level of the student, the way he can understand it. So the teacher says something. Let's go back to the example of physics in first grade. When this teacher is teaching physics to first graders with balls and playing, et cetera, he actually sees all the vectors, the strength, the force, and the direction, and the roughness of the floor. And he understands all the formulas and all the mathematics, complex, really complex math, that the gravity, and all complex things going on in with these boys, these girls, whatever, playing balls, within the balls. He sees the deepness of it, and he enjoys and says, ah, this ball, when you throw, like we're like playing pool, when this ball you throw it in this direction, it's going to hit the other ball into that direction, and then it's going to happen. Wow. And he sees all the formulas. The students don't see any numbers, any formulas. They're just playing fun, they're having fun, and it's good. This is a good teacher, you know, we play here. This is the difference between how the teacher sees the game and how the students see the game. So let's apply this idea to God. How does God see the world? There's no such a thing as the world. Forget it. It's just me. That's how God sees us. How do we see God? What do you mean? There's no God. I'm here. That's for sure. Look, I can actually touch me. I'm here. And God? I don't know. Maybe here, maybe yes, maybe no. I don't know. Okay, I have faith. Yeah, he's there. Do I see him? No. I see a world. That's the difference between upper unity and lower unity. The truth is that everything is God. And that's why the translation actually of Shema Yisrael, I said this in the previous class when we started, the translation is actually there's not no other thing but God. That's why it says God alone. He is alone. It's not just this one. One and not two. No. He's alone over here. But we don't see this. God sees this. At the same time, and this is the catch of it, and with this idea that I'm going to say now, we can actually go to the end of this whole thing and understand it. This is the main idea. When God creates the world, at the same time, he's conscious that there's no such a thing as a creation. It's just him. When the teacher gives the balls for the students to play, he's conscious that they're not playing a game. What do you mean a game? This is really complex physics, really complex, with lots of numbers and formulas, really complex. The mass of each ball and the weight of each ball, blah, blah, blah. The material, okay, really complex. But the students don't see this. The teacher sees this and knows this. The students don't. And the students, if one of the boys, girls, whatever, is really smart, is going to start asking, why are we playing? Wasn't this a class in physics? Like, I thought we were going to learn physics. What are we doing? What are these balls? Oh, so the teacher says, this guy is looking a little bit further than just the game. Okay, come to the side. I'll explain to you. And the other boys are playing. That's fine. That's nice. I can explain to you what's going on over here. That's because a student, this one catches a little bit more, understands a little bit more. But does it really understand the way the teacher understands? No, impossible. He's a first grader. Maybe later he's going to be a Nobel Prize of Physics. Fine. But right now he's a first grader. What do you want from him, from her? Whatever, the teacher is going to explain a little bit more. That's why in education, actually, you have to be very careful. That has nothing to do with our book, but have to be very careful and watch the students and see who's actually ready for more and give him more and give her more. And who's not so ready for more, don't worry, it's fine. Don't push. Give it time. But you have to like have your eyes on and your ears all very open. Okay, that's for the very small teaching chinuch class, education class. Let's go back to our subject. Again, upper unity means how God sees the world. He just actually doesn't see the world. He sees himself. And the lower unity is how we see God, so to speak. We see a world, and we have to think about that there's such a thing as a God, etc., etc., etc. What's the level? What's the tool, so to speak, that God uses to generate this difference between how he sees and how we see? This is called the quality of kingship, Malchus. That's what it's called. It's just a name. Malchus means kingship. That's what it means. Why is it called Malchus? We could talk about this for days, maybe months. But the main point of why it is this called Malchus, there's a verse in Mishlei, in Proverbs. Melech, Melech, Yamid Oretz. Ah, there's one word that I forgot, but the translation is that the king, by talking, he actually manages his land. He gives orders, go do this, go do that, etc. So we see that the word has a very special power. On one hand, the word reveals what's going on in the mind of the king. But on the other hand, the word actually conceals what's actually in the mind of the king, and he can say something and be thinking about something else. This is called Malchus. It's a level whose job description is to conceal God, his essence, and to reveal a world. That's what it does. That's what Malchus means. And as I wrote over there, it's the source of time, of time and space. That's why we say in the prayers every day, Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Imlech Lenavad. God was a king, God is a king, and God will be a king for always, forever, etc. It's one of the verses of the prayers, which is actually not a verse in Tanakh, in the Bible, but whatever, it's a verse in prayers. We say this every day. And that what it, and this verse means actually that just as there is such a thing as past, present, and future, this sensation of time, it's created by this level called Malchus. Before this level, there's no such a thing as time. What do I mean? Okay, the Alter Rebbe doesn't talk about this. I'm going to give you a very brief idea just to chew it and to think about it. We say that the world has 5,784 years. Okay, nice, fine. And we say that God created the world because he wants to be good with people, with us. So he created the world to be good. Okay, there's a famous question brought in Kabbalah. And the question is, if God is good, why didn't he create the world before? Like, you're only expressing your kindness for 5,784 years. That's not so much, you know? For God, it doesn't sound so much. So if you're really good, create the world before and be, so to speak, more kind. And do kindness for longer. 10,000 years, 10 million years, whatever. And the answer to this question is very simple. There's no such a thing as time for God. He is not bound by time. We are bound by time. He is not. He creates time. So he is not old. He's not young. He could not create the world, quote unquote, before. There's no such a thing as before. There's no time. We used to live bound to time. And that's okay. That's the way God created the world. But he is not bound to time. He creates time. What's the source of time? This level called Malchus. This level called Malchus. And let's go back to an idea that we spoke about before. God and his qualities are one. And this level called kingship, Malchus, is also one of the qualities of God. It's also one of the expressions of God. So God and this level of Malchus are also one. Really? How does it work? Nobody understands. Faith, again, emuna. There's no way to really understand this unity. Therefore, we say you have to either believe on it or not, but whatever. It's just faith. Now, this level called Malchus, kingship, whatever, is not only the source of time and space, but the source of everything that exists, which is actually part of time and space. And actually, modern science also sees the world like that, the description of time and space. But the point here, the second line that I put in red, is that since this quality is the source of time and space, that means that everything that happens in the world is defined by this quality of God. And God, by knowing this quality, which is actually knowing himself, because this quality is one with himself, he knows everything that happens over here in the world, because this is the source of the world. Again, can we understand this? No. Faith. Another point, since the whole world, everything happens through God, so to speak, quote unquote, shining through this quality of kingship, malchus, everything happens in this quality, through this quality, therefore, the whole world actually exists just in this quality. It's like the ray of sun within the sun. Is it called a ray? No, it's called sun. So therefore, the whole creation does not add anything to God. In other words, this is a very difficult idea to understand. And again, it's faith. I'm going to say the same idea, exactly the same with different words, but it's the same idea. When I talk, my speech doesn't add anything to me. I can become smarter by talking, which is actually what happens when a teacher is teaching. The teacher himself, herself, whatever, knows better the ideas because he's talking, etc., etc. That helps you to incorporate ideas to yourself. That's why many people learn actually pronouncing the words and talking about it, etc., etc. But the point is that the truth is that your words don't add to yourself. On the contrary, your words come out of yourself. You actually are the source of your words. But your words don't add anything to you. The whole world is like, quote unquote, the words of God. Those words don't add anything to him. Why? Because they're one with him. They're not something outside of him. There's no such a thing as something outside of him. It's like the ray of the sun within the sun. That's why the world, by existing, doesn't add to God. One more point to this that is very important. And this is not something I came up with. No, this is something that is actually quoted, or the idea is brought in Irmiyahu, Jeremiah, the prophet. I don't remember the chapter, forget it. I'm not good with numbers. But he says that the ancient nations of the world, the pagan, the idolaters, etc., they used to think that there's such a thing as the world and there's such a thing as God. And God and the world are like two separate things. And God created the world and now he went to sleep or whatever. He left the world over there to the stars and to the constellations, etc., etc. And Irmiyahu says, forget it, that's not the way Judaism thinks. No. The world, and we go back to the first chapter actually on this idea, the world constantly depends on God creating it. There's no such a thing as the world being independent of God. It looks independent from God. Yes. Why? Shem Elohim, concealment of the energy of God, and the tzaddikim, the righteous people do miracles, and that you can see a little bit of God. Okay, very nice. But regular people don't see this. Regular people see a world, and we think it's separated from God, but in truth, it's not. There's not such a thing as separation from God. And that's why, again, the last line, the world actually doesn't add anything to him. It's just part of him. The important thing about that concept is, and actually this is what we're learning, is God in his kindness allows us to think about ourselves like something separated from him in order to search for him, to look for him. It's exactly like a father. Again, I always talk about men because I'm a man, nothing against women. Don't misunderstand me. But it's like a father playing with a son, a small son. And the father like hides the face and says, where is Tati? Where is Tati? And the son goes, I don't know, where's Tati? Here is Tati. And everybody's happy. It's like a very simple game. Of course, you can play with very small children. But the point of the game is exactly what God does with us. It's exactly that. He hides himself for us to look for him, for us to search him, for us to feel there's a void without him. Something is amiss. Something is weird, strange. This is the whole system that God set up. But when you go deeper into that system, you reach this idea that you just said. We live actually within God. There's no such a thing as outside of God. Now, we are the ray of the sun within the sun. That's what we are. Nothing else. And nothing less. Like, that's what we say. We're part of God and we have a responsibility. Okay. So if you're going to ask me, I don't have the strength to change the world. What do you want from me? Hey, you're a part of God. You do have the strength. Do you have to change every single part of the world? Well, look, I live in Argentina. I have nothing to do with Mozambique, and I can't help anybody over there. I don't even know how to reach over there, how to get there. So probably that's not the part of the world that I have to work on. Somebody else that lives over there or lives in Australia, maybe he's closer. I don't know. Not me. It's not my mission in the world. But certainly the people around me, the world that I can actually reach, yes, that's my responsibility. Oh, but I can't. I don't have the strength. Yeah, you do have the strength. That's why you reach that people. Because you have the strength to actually influence them and help them and whatever the case is. And ultimately, that strength is you're a part of God. Yes, definitely. Let's go. Chapter 8. From now on, the ideas are actually simpler, easier. We already passed, so to speak. The most difficult parts were chapter 4, chapter 6, and chapter 5 is like a parenthesis. Chapter 6 and chapter 7. Those are like the meat of the whole thing. Now that Rebbe gives more ideas to help us play in our minds with, again, understanding him, meditating on him, like we said in the introduction, that these ideas that the Alter Rebbe is going to convey, like he's explaining to us, help us hold on, so to speak, to God, even in the dark times, even in the difficult times. Think about these ideas and you're going to feel a part of God. You're going to feel your strength. You're going to feel responsibility, etc., etc., like we explained. Now, the Alter Rebbe in chapter 8 brings a famous Rambam. Rambam, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, he lived in Spain in years 1100s, sort of, more or less. And he was a philosopher, he was a doctor. He brings an idea that was very criticized, very, very strongly criticized. And the Alter Rebbe explains in a very simple way, don't criticize the Rambam, because he's talking about something very specific. What's the idea the Rambam brings? The Rambam says God is the knowledge, he is the one knowing, and he is the thing being known. These are the words of the Rambam. This is what he says. And it sounds strange because he's everything. To the end of the day, he's everything. But the Rambam says it with a specific word, knowledge. So you're defining God. And if you define God as knowledge, no, I don't like this. Many, many people criticize this in his times, afterwards, etc., etc. And the Rebbe says very simple, look, he's only speaking about God in the level of qualities. The Rambam is not talking about the essence of God. He's only talking about the level of qualities. And in the qualities, you're right, all the qualities are united, as we learned already, it is a matter of faith, we don't understand it, but in the qualities, all the qualities are together, are one, even if they are opposite, as we learned, kindness and severity are the same thing, so to speak, and they are all united to God, and they're one with God, and this is something we cannot understand. So what's the problem with the Rambam? There's no problem with him. If you actually put it in a specific way, in place, it's fine. The Alter Rebbe doesn't say this. This is myself. It's like saying, well, Newton was wrong, like gravity and the laws of gravity. Was he wrong? Well, if you live in the earth, he's not so wrong. He's fine. And whatever he said works, even today. And people use it in physics and mathematics, etc., etc. He's fine. Okay, if you go to the space, maybe Newton is wrong. Maybe it's not enough. I don't know. I don't want to say the word wrong. Maybe it's not enough. Okay, but he lived in the earth. What's the problem? And most of us live in the earth, so there's no problem with Newton. You can continue using his ideas and you're going to be fine. And if you throw a ball from the 10th floor, you can calculate how strong it's going to hit the floor. How? Okay, go and make all the formulas of Newton and you're going to be fine. Again, you go to space, it doesn't work. Okay, who cares? That's basically what the Alter Rebbe does with the Rambam. Don't think that the Rambam is talking about space. It's talking about the essence of God. You're right. He would be wrong if you say that the Rambam is talking about the essence of God. But if you say that the Rambam is only talking about the qualities of God, he's okay. He's fine. He's fine. Now, as I explained before, by saying this, the Alter Rebbe basically explains what the Rambam is doing is we're only trying to describe God in a way we can understand. We understand knowledge, we understand kindness, we understand severity. That does not define the essence of God. The essence of God doesn't have any description at all. There's nothing we can say about him. And whatever you say about the essence is nonsense. Doesn't make any sense. The Alter Rebbe brings the example very clear example is like saying about a specific knowledge, let's say whatever, physics, mathematics. If you say about this knowledge that it's so deep, you cannot touch it with your hands, anybody, these are the words of the Alter Rebbe, anybody's going to laugh at you. What do you mean? Knowledge, you don't touch with your hands. You can touch an apple, you can touch a computer, whatever. You don't touch knowledge. Doesn't make any sense. So the same thing happens with God. If you're going to say God is kind, what are you talking about? God is beyond any definition, you can say. Any definition. His essence is beyond any definition. That's why what I said before is that God doesn't have a job description, sort of thing, so to speak. Anything you say about him is going to limit him. But again, that's when you're talking about his essence. If you're talking about how he expresses himself, yes, he's kind and he understands and he's knowledgeable and he's wise, etc., etc. And that's fine. You just have to put everything in its place, in its right, proper context, so to speak. Chapter 9. Now, the Alter Rebbe is going to play a little bit. It's chapter 9, chapter 10 is basically pretty similar. The Alter Rebbe is going to play a little bit to try to explain to us what we just said in chapter 8. About the essence of God and the way he expresses himself. And the way that Rebbe explains this is actually very simple and very physical in our lives, so to speak. The Alter Rebbe brings a verse. The verse in Tehillim says, Ma rabu ma'aseichu Hashem, I think it's chapter 104, 103, 4. Ma rabu ma'aseichu Hashem, kulam b'chokhmah. How multiform, how many things you have made, O Lord. You have made all of them with wisdom. But the verse puts together wisdom and action. They go together. You made with wisdom. What does that mean? The Alter Rebbe says, look, there's a whole chain of things, levels that happen in a human being. And then we're going to apply this to God. In a human being, there's many levels that apply from the moment that you come up with an idea. Which that is called wisdom, to the moment that you actually do this thing. And the steps are basically these five steps that the Alter Rebbe defines over there. You from wisdom, which we're not going to explain because the Alter Rebbe doesn't do this and it's not the place, like the deepness of the different levels in the head. Forget about this. Just let's call like ideas, wisdom. When you have an idea, when you have the wisdom, in order to actually do it, the steps that you have to follow are the following. Wisdom, the idea in your mind, then emotion. You have to actually feel that you're actually connected to this thing. If you're not connected to this thing, you're not going to do it. You have to like this thing or reject this thing, whatever. If you don't want to do it because of something bad, you really have to reject it and feel it. If you don't really feel it, you're not going to reject it. Like, for instance, if somebody offers you poison to drink, and you don't really understand that this is poison, this is really bad, you're gonna say, okay, why not? Let's try it. But if you really understand and you feel it in your within yourself, this is going to kill you. Okay, a normal person would say, I don't want to drink this. This is not for me. This is called emotion. Then from emotion comes thought. Once you really feel something in your inside of you, you understand it, you feel it, you start thinking how to get it, if it's something that you feel is good, or how to really reject it. What do you do with this poison? Do you throw it in the face of the other guy? Do you run away? What do you do? So you think of different ideas. After thinking about these different ideas, you actually speak about it, talk about it, can be with somebody else, can be with yourself, whatever. And then there's action. Those are the levels that are between wisdom and action. So when the verse, let's go back to the beginning of this slide, when the verse says, Hashem created, God created everything, the whole creation with wisdom. He did it with wisdom. What is he saying? He's saying like this: look, for God, all the wisdom and all the greatness and all the mystical things you can think about, that's like action. It's so low as action. He's like saying like this would be an example of this. Would be saying like this. Are you going to say that because a person changed the diaper of a baby, he's the Nobel Prize of medicine? Nah. Like anybody, basically, anybody can change a diaper. It's okay, it's fine, it's easy. You can like it or not like it, but whatever. It's not such a medical thing. It's not so complicated. What this means, the example means for God, the whole creation is like just changing a diaper. It's pretty easy. And what we can actually think that this is such a complicated thing and such a complicated creation, and it's the wisdom of God for him is like action. So what for us, there's a very far, so to speak, distance between wisdom and action. For God is the same. Action for him is like wisdom. It's the same thing. This is what the Alter Rebbe wants to bring in chapter 9. And why is he saying this? Again, let's go back to chapter 8 just for a second. Because we're trying to understand what does that mean that God, he is one with his qualities, and that God, he is the knowledge, the knowledgeable, all these qualities, all these things, even wisdom. For him is insignificant. This is like the key word. I didn't actually write it over here, but this is like the main word. I should have written it. The point is, anything you can think about is insignificant in front of God. That's like chapter 9. Chapter 10. Even though we don't understand him, because again, for him, wisdom is like action. He's beyond our understanding. We only have faith, etc., etc. Even so, our sages taught us different ideas that we can use to try to understand God. And one of those ideas is called Oir, light. You're going to find many, many books of Kabbalah, Hasidus, light. The light of God, the infinite light of God, the revelation of God, blah, blah, blah. Why is this example given? Why light? Because actually, there are other examples also. But why our sages chose the main example, the main thing is light. Because light has many qualities that actually resemble how God does the creation. I just wrote a few of them. Just as the light is annulled to its source, the world is annulled to him. What does that mean that the light is annulled to its source? Very simple. The light depends on its source shining to exist. As soon as the source stops shining, there's no more light. There's no such a thing as independent light. There's no such a thing as light separated from its source. Doesn't make any sense. You can argue in modern physics, they talk about this like light as a flux, whatever. This is not a science class. The point is that regular lights that we use and we see, etc., depend its existence depend on being connected to the source. That's called bitul, annulment in the regular classic Jewish thought. And that's why our sages choose this example to explain what the world is. The whole world is just like light, and it's just like the ray of the sun inside of the sun, as we have explained before, we spoke before, etc. Now, having said this, the Alter Rebbe explains in very briefly, that's why I'm also doing it very briefly, the Alter Rebbe explains that each day of the creation, there are 6 days of creation, then there's Shabbos, the seventh day, each day of creation, a different quote unquote light shone in the world, which actually means it God expressed himself in a different way in each one of the days of creation. Like the first day is the kindness because God gave, completely gave himself and created the world. Second day is severity, he concealed. That's why in the second day you see that there's separation, there's a difference between the heavens, the waters above, the waters below, etc. The separation. That's severity. So in each day of creation, God expressed himself in a different way. But the point is that it's not that he created something separate from him. No, he just expressed himself in a different way in each one of the days of creation. Chapter 11. Chapter 10 should lead us to say what I wrote in the beginning of chapter 11. Actually, each one of the 10 utterances, whatever phrase that God used, is just a revelation of his qualities. Like, for instance, the first one is let there be light. Light means kindness, revelation, whatever. Day, and the second day, there's again separation. Each one of these phrases, these utterances, whatever they call them, actually reveals one of his qualities. Is God showing himself in a specific way? In the same way, that's why the Torah says that God spoke and created the world, the same way, and I said this before also, that man's talk, speech reveals the words that we say, reveal what's in our head. So the idea of God talking doesn't mean that he has a mouth. He doesn't have a mouth. He's revealing himself in a specific way. And this is very actually, this is easy to understand. You can speak in different ways, and that reveals different aspects of your life. If you speak to your children, you speak in one way. If you speak to your students, you speak in a different way. You speak to your spouse, you speak in a different way. It's the same you, but you speak differently because you're trying to convey different feelings, thoughts, ideas, whatever. And so you speak differently. That's why in each day of creation, there's a different kind of speech revealing God in a different way. In Hasidus, there's the whole argument, why did God create in 10 utterances and not more, not less, etc.? He could have done it in a different way. This is also in Pirkei Avos, the ethics of our fathers. Yes, you're right. He could have done it in any amount, in an infinite way also, because he's infinite. He can express himself in infinity, but he decided to do it in 10 utterances. There's no reason for that. There's no real reason for that. People say because the number 10 is a complete number. Yeah, but you can ask, why is the 10 complete number? Why not 11? Why not 12? There's no answer to that. God decided that he wants to express himself in 10 specific ways. That's the only explanation I found, actually. Maybe there is another one that I didn't find. It could be, but that's the only one I found. Okay, so just as the words of man reveal what's in his head, in the same way, the words of God reveal his thoughts, his emotions, his wisdom, his will. When he wants something, he speaks about it. Quote unquote, he speaks, he says it, and that comes to be, that exists. Why is the Alter Rebbe talking about this? Because at the beginning, really, really at the beginning of the whole book, chapter one, he brought a verse, forever is God, his word stands firm in heavens. And the Alter Rebbe said that the whole world depends on God talking and speaking, etc., etc. So the Alter Rebbe wants to explain now how this speech of God actually carries his will. He actually does the world, creates the world with speech. Just as when I want something, I ask it and I say, can you please bring me a glass of water? So I'm actually expressing my will through my speech. I want a glass of water. So I'm saying this. The same way, exactly the same way, it happens with God. Naturally, it's the other way around. Because it happens like that with God, it happens like that with us also. But this is what the Alter Rebbe is trying to convey. Like the words of God in creation are really powerful, have a lot of information and energy, etc., etc. And by, as we're going to learn in a minute, by talking and combining his words, he creates the whole world and he actually fulfills his will that this world should exist. How does it work? Okay, chapter 12. As I explained before, each letter has an energy. What does that mean? The Rebbe doesn't go deep into this. There are other places in Hasidus. Each letter in the Hebrew alphabet actually has a shape, specific shape. You probably know there's like the modern way of writing Hebrew, and there's like an ancient way of writing Hebrew. We're talking about the ancient way. And within the ancient way, there's a specific way of writing called Ksav Ashuris. Ksav Ashuris means the translation of the expression is like a beautiful writing. That is the writing used to write a Sefer Torah, the Sefer Torah itself, the mezuzah, the tefillin, etc. It's a beautiful writing, whatever. That's how it's called. We're talking about that the shape of those letters. Each one of those letters, besides the idea of corresponding to a number, like the Aleph, the first letter is number one, the Beis, the second number two, and so on. Besides that, the shape itself of the word, of the letter, I'm sorry, carries an energy. Each letter is actually written with other letters, but they're like turned and whatever. So each letter has different traces of ink, and each trace has an energy, has a something to it. It's not just because somebody thought about it, oh, this is nice. No, has a specific energy. Now, when you take those letters and you combine them in a word, which is a group of letters, so you have to add the energy of each letter, and there's an added energy because that letter, those letters, I'm sorry, they actually make a word. I'm going to give you an example in a second. So now you have the energy of each one of the letters plus the energy of the word. And of course, when you, from that word, you make a phrase, you have the energy of each letter, which is in each word, which is a added energy to just the sum of energies of the letters. And you have the letters of, I'm sorry, the words in the phrase. So you have the added energy of each letter, of each word, of the whole phrase. And an added energy, because this phrase conveys an idea. Today was a nice day. Okay, it's a whole thing. It's a whole idea, full of letters, full of words, and full of letters. Now, the original energy of each one of the 10 utterances that express and reveal God in a specific way, that energy is so powerful that God decided to start combining, interchanging, exchanging, some adding up, doing all kinds of different plays, so to speak, games with the letters in order to create the world. Why does the Alter Rebbe explain this? Very simple. We spoke about this in the first chapter. In the whole text of creation, there are many, many creations that you don't see. Like, it doesn't say the word stone. It doesn't say the word Evan in Hebrew. It doesn't say the word dog, Kelev in Hebrew. There's so many creations that you see around you that God actually didn't say. So how does this thing exist? Because there are many, many combinations of all these energies that each letter has, each word has, each phrase has, they get combined in order to create the whole world. The example I thought about, it's brought in Hasidus, not my example. It's not in the text. We're learning, but it's an easy example. The word Baruch. Baruch means blessed. The first word of basically, not all of them, but most of the blessings, most of them start with Baruch, not all of them. Baruch means blessed, but or the source of blessing. Baruch Atah Hashem is God, you're the source of blessing, so you created this or you did that, etc., etc. The word Baruch itself has these letters, Beis, Reish, Vav, and Chav. If you take each one of these letters, like you separate them from the letter, each one of those letters don't carry the information of Baruch, blessed. It doesn't matter really the concrete translation of Baruch, but whatever the case is, however you want to translate it, it means something. Let's say it means blessed. But if you take the letter Reish, it doesn't mean blessed. Now, if you add those letters in the proper order, first the Beis, then the Reish, then the Chav, then the Vav, I'm sorry, then the Chav. Oh, so you have a word. The word is Baruch. Take the same letters, just play around and put it in a different order, and you don't have the same information. This is an example of, even though each letter has its own energy, there's an added energy when you get a word in a specific order. If you change the order, no, that added energy is not there. Maybe it's something else, like, I didn't write it down, but it's interesting. The word, there's a word with two letters, Aleph and Beis, like the first two letters of the alphabet. If you put first Aleph and then Beis, means Av, father. If you put first Beis and then Aleph, means Bo, came. Somebody came, he came, she came, whatever. It's the same two letters. The order is different. The information is different. And if you put this word with these letters, with this information into a phrase, okay, we'll have to see what the phrase says. It can change the meaning according to the phrase. This is what it means, that all these letters that God spoke, they constantly change, and exchange, combine, and all kinds of things to create a whole world, even though that particular creation that we're looking at, say a dog, say a computer or whatever, is not really defined in the Torah. However, through these combinations, you get anything you can ever think of. And God, of course, is infinite, and he thinks of all kinds of things. All those creations are actually created with the words of the 10 utterances, combined, exchanged, etc., etc. There are two things, two different things. You have the crown of each letter, and you have the nikud, the little points inside the letter or below the letter. Yes, that changes also the energy, definitely. It changes the meaning of the letter, of the word. Like, for instance, the word Mitzrayim means Egypt. Mitzrayim, if you actually read it with the same letters, just in a different nikud, the different vowels below the letter, you say Metzarim, means limits. So when we say, go out of Mitzrayim, go out of Egypt, we're saying actually, go beyond your own limits. It's a different word, different world. However, it's the same letters, but they carry a different information. Yeah. The point of all of this is, again, when you look at the world, after learning this small book, so to speak, when you look at the world, you're not looking at the world just like that. You're looking at combinations of letters that God is constantly speaking, constantly creating. And actually, you're looking at God. Okay, we don't see his energy. But why? Because you have Avaya and you have Elohim. Okay, you can go with this the whole life. But the point is, actually, the whole creation is just God's words combining themselves, and the letters combining themselves and changing themselves, etc., etc., in order to create a sensation of a world, in order to, for us, to search God. That's the whole point of this whole system, so to speak.